This is the history of America in poems, and we are talking about children's poetry. And this section, we're going to be talking about turn of the century poems, poems from about 1890s to the 1910s. And like the last section, this one's probably going to be on the short side. And we'll get going in a second. I have a little Chiweenie dog in my lap for the last few recording sessions. And I think she's either cold and needs to be in my lap, or she's, again, concerned about me. Like, why are you talking so much? Poor thing. So I'm going to try. It's kind of interesting to kind of record this and concentrate and pet the dog. But we will do it. So this is about 1899 right now, and I have two poems by Paul Laurence Dunbar. And the first one is Little Brown Baby from 1899. And he did a variety of different kind of styles of poetry, but he was most famous for his African-American dialect poems, which at the turn of the century were very popular, but by the time of the Harlem Renaissance, in the age of modernism, which we'll get to, the Harlem Renaissance poets hated the stereotypical representation that came out of these poems. They were so popular that they became stereotypes of Black people, and the Harlem Renaissance poets were looking for more what they thought of as dignified representations of Black life in America. And so Paul Laurence Dunbar became unpopular again in the canon, like some of the other poets we talked about already and a few that we're going to talk about in a minute. And it was definitely a critical site of conflict even at the time, because some Harlem Renaissance writers like Zora Neale Hurston were doing dialect poems herself. So it wasn't a kind of monolithic idea about how people should write. It was an argument about how Black American writers should portray each other. And Paul Laurence Dunbar kind of got trapped in this popular form of writing that he was doing that was dialect poems. And that's not all he did. And so these days, critics are trying to rescue him and revisit his work, which I'm glad, because I think I like some of these poems that we're gonna talk about today, and we're gonna revisit him again when we get back to the turn of the century adult poems. So we'll come back to this idea of the kind of dialect poems he was doing and maybe the damage that was causing at the time. But the Little Brown Baby is a very sweet poem about teasing a kid, teasing a child. I think it's very sweet. And so I put that one in. And The Seedling from 1913 is, let me read a piece of that because it's very work ethic, self-help, nature poem. I'll do the best I can as a quiet little seedling. I'll sweat and pant. Little folks, be like the seedling. Always do the best you can. Every child must share life's labor just as well as every man. So, I mean, this is self-help. Work hard. Get ahead. And in the African-American community, this meant something different than it did for white audiences, because they're trying to catch up after the end of slavery. So I still think Paul Laurence Dunbar is an important poet that we need to keep reading. Angela Sorby quotes Henry Louis Gates in her essay about a poem called In the Morning from 1903 by Paul Laurence Dunbar. And Gates was saying the first line of this poem became an affectionate, playful way for parents to in African-American houses to wake up their kids, at least for his generation anyway. And so I included that. And it's kind of like a get up, wake up, work ethic poem too. So I think that's an important one to read. And then we're going to move on to a woman named Sarah Teasdale. She's actually from St. Louis. She's one of the St. Louis poets. And she was one of those sentimental women poets that the modernists did not like. And so like Dunbar, she's sort of being resurrected now in her reputation. I mean, she's sort of being reread again to try to find out, you know, what we missed when we dumped her from the canon. But she was very popular during the Gilded Age and at the turn of the century. But modernists did not like these women writers because they didn't think they were experimental enough, and they didn't appreciate the feminist subject matter of these writers like Edna St. Vincent Millay. And I don't really think Sarah Teasdale was a feminist writer, but she did write a lot about the cult of the self and self-understanding. And this was all very common to lyric poets of the time and lyric poems. And that's a lot of these women writers were writing lyric poems. So another thing that the modernists did not like. But she wrote a lot about self-definition, and the roles of women were changing at this time, and the sexual mores were changing at this time. So it's interesting to read Sarah Teasdale against a writer at the same time like Edna St. Vincent Millay, because they're both very different. Sarah Teasdale's actually much more conservative of a writer. So it's interesting to read her. We're not going to read any of Edna St. Vincent Millay until later, but we'll come back to them. The last part of this section is about an anonymous kind of folk poetry called playground poetry. And I didn't recognize this by the titles, and I assume these are poems that kind of happened in, let's see, the 1900s and late 1800s. They don't quite know. But definitely the turn of the century. And when I started reading about them, when I was putting this together, I realized that these are poems that I recited when I moved to St. Louis at the age of 7. The girls on the playground were reciting these poems, and so I learned them then. And while the boys were climbing things like the jungle gyms, the girls were playing hopscotch and jumping rope and doing clapping games. I mean, there were some girls over on the jungle gym trying to harass the boys, but a lot of us were jumping rope and playing hopscotch. And these were songs we would sing while we did that. And so these are very oral poems. They're very participatory poems, open to improvisation. The versions I've attached in this class list may be different if you're a girl of my age, or maybe girls are still reciting these on the playground. I don't know, but you know, you might have memorized them in different versions. But they're very ritualistic, and they're about word games. A lot of them are play on avoiding saying bad words, like saying ask instead of the word ass. And sometimes they're about invocation and even witchery. Like, we used to play light as a feather at slumber parties, and it never worked, by the way. But they're kind of an element of magic about them. And it's interesting that all ethnic backgrounds of girls sang these songs. They were pretty uniform. And sometimes some of these playground songs were kind of racist. And I didn't include one of the more racist ones here because it was actually not an American one, but it came from another country. So it didn't really apply here, but they were out there. And they could, you know, these songs could be inexplicably political. I remember when I was 7 years old, I moved from a very multicultural school in New Mexico, in Albuquerque, which had, you know, Hispanic kids and Native American kids and Anglo kids. And I moved to this kind of white suburb of St. Louis, which was kind of a racist place, if you know St. Louis very well. And I was very confused because within the first month of being there, it's 1977, so Jimmy Carter and Gerald Ford are running for president. And the kids that were my age were in the playground singing a derogatory song about Jimmy Carter, like rewritten from the Oscar Mayer Wiener commercial on TV. And I just didn't like it. Seemed so bizarre to me because I was seven. I didn't know anything about politics. And so I went home and I'm like, why are they singing? Why are these kids singing about Jimmy Carter? But it was a brave new world. And I'll never forget that. That was just one of the folk, some folk song, folk poetry that happened on my playground when I moved to St. Louis. And so a lot of these poems, the two I've attached are Miss Susie Had a Steamboat and Miss Mary Mac Mac Mac, are about girls being inside in a place of safety and boys being outside. And that, again, we've talked about the big tension of this in childhood and in poems, and it will, it grows into young adulthood when you're a teenager. Where what space do you feel safe venturing out into? And when I think about this, I think a lot about how far my brothers were willing to go from our front door of our house, or the boys in my school were willing to go from the schoolyard, versus how far the girls were willing to go. How far you were willing to stray before you started to feel a little bit unsafe, like maybe I can't get myself back home. And I know in New Mexico, my brothers used to go to the ditches, which were very dangerous because they could flood at any time, and I didn't even know where the ditches were. I would go to the baseball field. That's as far as I would go and play around in the baseball field. But in St. Louis, they would go from our neighborhood through the woods into a place called Creve Coeur Lake. And I just couldn't even imagine going all the way to the lake. I went into the woods, but I didn't go that far into the lake. So, where girls and boys play is fascinating. And, I think a lot about my childhood was spent indoors playing board games with my friends. I mean, we did do some crazy things like try to roller skate through the woods, but we didn't do anything as brave as the boys were doing for sure. And I would have liked to. But because these were folk poems, women out there might have memorized different versions, like I've said. And again, it's still shocking to me to see how old these poems are. But when I started reading it, I knew it. Miss Susie had a steamboat. The steamboat had a bell. Miss Susie went to heaven. The steamboat went to hello, operator. Please dial number 9. And if you disconnect me, I'll kick you from behind the refrigerator. I mean, it's just one transgression word jumping off into a whole other thing. And it's very creative. Miss Mary Mac, too. I remembered it right away. Miss Mary Mac Mac Mac, all dressed in black, 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 with silver buttons, 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 all down her back, back, back. So, amazing how old that stuff is. Okay, so one children's poem, very short poem, a short rhyming thing. I wanted to point out: no cuts, no butts, no coconuts. I think this was after my time because it's year unknown, but I do not remember anybody saying that in the school ground lines, and everybody was butting in, so it would have been very helpful to have known this little poem called No Cuts, No Butts, No Coconuts. But I didn't have it. So that's that. We're going to be talking about the modernists next and the poems that they wrote that many children still read today.